All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. Bobby Fenton with you, Week 6 edition. I think I incorrectly said Week 6 edition last week to open the show, even though it was Week 5, but it is Week 6 now, and the Bucks have a 3-2 record as they get set to head up to Pittsburgh. Only the 10th time they've ever played the Steelers in any place, and it's only the 5th time they've ever gone up to Pittsburgh, and they'll do that on Sunday at 1 as they look to go 4-2 against a struggling Steelers team that has lost 4 in a row since beating the Bengals in the opener in Week 1. Of course, now they've got the rookie quarterback Kenny Pickett going. They're coming off a big loss to the Bills, and I mean big. They lost by 5 touchdowns. I don't know if that bodes well or not. In fact, we'll give you some numbers on that coming up later in the show. But nice win by the Bucks against the Falcons. And, you know, we'll start with that. I know it's a few days in the rearview mirror now, but there are a few things from that game I wanted to get to before we look ahead to the Bucks game at Pittsburgh. But to see the Bucks take care of business against a team they should beat, which we talked about last week, is refreshing. Now, I didn't like everything that was going on. You know, when the Bucks got up 21-0, that should have been pretty much easy the rest of the way, and then it ended up being a little tighter at the end than we want it to be. And it could have been very, very tight at the end had it not been for an unfortunate, I'm saying unfortunate because I think it's unfortunate for the league, an unfortunate roughing the passer call that kind of put the game-clinching drive for the Bucks into full security. They're about to punt before that, and even though I don't think the Falcons necessarily come back and win, it would have made things interesting. But before all that happened, I was a little disappointed, mainly with the second half offense. I mean, when the Bucks got the 21-0 lead, they went 3 straight 3-and-outs after that. And the Falcons, even though they didn't do anything offensively most of the day, even they never had a single 3-and-out. They at least got a first down every time they had the ball. And so to see the Bucs offense just kind of go to sleep after that was disappointing. You know, obviously when you're up 21-0, I get it. It's a little bit different. You feel pretty comfortable. But then again, it didn't stay comfortable. It got to be a one-score game there late. And so I'd like to see the Bucs improve a little more on, I want to use some cliche like the killer instinct, but, you know, keep piling on points, keep being aggressive, keep scoring. These games in the NFL, especially these days, I mean, we know now. You know, it used to be in the 80s or the 90s, like, you got it by 20 points. Oh, that's the end. I mean, that's it. Like, now in the NFL, it's more like an NBA game. There's runs. You get down, you know, 2 touchdowns, 3 touchdowns. Oh, now we go on a little run here. I mean, it's back and forth like that. And the Falcons weren't able to come all the way back, but it didn't have to be as close as it was. Now, let's go talk about the end of the game for a minute, because the Bucs, again, trying to kill some clock, and they end up calling roughing the passer on a play that Brady, obviously, there was nothing wrong with the play whatsoever. We know that now. And we knew it right at the time, too. I thought Jerome Boger's crew was horrible all day. I think they're a horrible crew. You've heard of this show before. You know I talk about crews, not just individual referees. And the Sean Hockley crew is my least favorite because they're like those by-the-book nerds that throw every single possible flag they could ever possibly throw. And then Hockley gets on the mic and gives these really over-wordy explanations. And it's just like, dude, shut up. You know, nobody came to see you guys. I don't like that brand of football. Whenever they do a game, it's harder to watch that game as a fan. I don't like Hockley's crew. Boger's crew I dislike for different reasons because they're just incompetent. And Boger himself, you know, is the one that has that late call on the roughing the passer, but they were terrible spotting the ball. Those 2 spots of the ball in the opening drive when the Bucks ended up going for it on 4th and 1, what was 1 even though it should have been a first down, and they didn't get it, and they ended up not scoring. But the 3rd down play, the spot by Cade Otton, or the spot on the catch by Cade Otton, was atrocious. It was a full yard behind where it should have been. Then they go for it on 4th down, and even that one wasn't a good spot, even though that play wasn't great anyway. But still, they still got the 1st down. Bad spot there. And these are things that aren't that hard to do. I mean, you know, we complain about refereeing a lot. It is a tough job, and especially in football of all sports, it's a really tough job. And it's easy to sit on the couch and say things that you can see, but you're not down there. Which is kind of the point, by the way, of having a sky ref, which I've always said, because it is, in fact, easier to do these things when you can watch them on TV. So why not offer these guys help? And I've said this over and over and over. Like what I just said, people be like, well, it's easy for you to say. You get the benefit of replay and sitting there on the couch. Yeah, exactly. Give the referees that benefit too. You know, it's not that hard, and it doesn't have to be from some fan like me. But you can have a referee sitting in the press box watching. You can literally be watching the actual telecast on Fox or CBS or NBC or whatever it is. And he can just have a, you know, give him a 65, 75-inch flat screen You can even set it up like a living room. Like, put an actual couch in there. Give them food. Same thing we're doing. Sit them down. Hey, dude, just keep an eye on things. Give him a beeper that he can talk to the head official downstairs, Boger, whoever the crew chief is. And then he can be like, oh, like, because you know how we're watching the game on TV, and within 5 seconds of something happening, we can tell, oh, that was a good call, that was a bad call, oh, that's not what they thought. Yeah, it's really hard to officiate down the field, which is why we shouldn't make them solely do that on their own without helping them. I mean, anybody sitting at home, or sitting in the press box, excuse me, if we had a Sky ref with that beeper in their hand, within 3 seconds could have beeped down to Boger and said, yo, hey, that spot, no, you got to get that. That should be on the 32 and a half or whatever. You could tell them that. You don't have to delay the game. Nobody wants all these game delays, but you wouldn't have to do that. So anyway, I wasn't trying to go on a rant about, you know, how to revamp officiating, but that crew was bad, okay? And it went both ways. I thought the Vita Vea roughing the passer call was terrible too. And then, yes, the one against Atlanta was even worse, and they had a right to be upset. Everybody had a right to be upset. The game was horribly officiated. At a level that you're at with the NFL, with as many eyes that are on it, both for entertainment purposes, both for gambling, competitive purposes, whatever purposes you want to name, at that level, you can't trot out crews like that that can't handle basic stuff, okay? And I thought that was a really, really bad indictment of the NFL. Just those guys, now, let alone the whole roughing the passer thing, which is league-wide, not just those guys. But as far as that final call, just to put one other thing to bed, these numbers are courtesy of Greg Allman, who is the Buccaneer beat writer for The Athletic. I heard so much on Twitter, people saying, oh, well, you know, that's Brady. He gets that call. They're going to protect him, blah, blah. The Falcons were grousing about it. Dean Pease, the assistant coach, was overheard saying, that's the league protecting Brady, bah. You know, that was the popular refrain, that Brady gets that call. Tom Brady, this year, that was the first roughing the passer against him, okay? He only had one in 2021 that was called on a play where he was hit. And since he became a Buccaneer in 2020, going on two-plus seasons now, he is 16th amongst all quarterbacks in how many roughing the passer calls he has drawn. He's done it six times. I don't say he's done it like he did something, but he's had six. And the leader is Matt Ryan with 17. So Brady's not getting any special favoritism or consideration. The league's not going out of their way to protect Brady. That call wasn't just, oh, they're going to protect Tom Brady. It was a terrible call. I'm just saying that's not why. All right? And it's almost like, and Josh Allen is second, and there's a few other, I think Jared Goff is up there. It's almost like quarterbacks, Allen being the exception, who don't run a lot and stay in the pocket and hold the ball too long, they get the most roughing the passer calls because, yeah, they're getting drilled constantly back there, so you're going to get a few. Brady gets the ball out very quickly normally. I'm not surprised he doesn't lead in that category. But don't give me this bull bleep, oh, Brady, that's why they... No, it has nothing to do with Brady, okay? So, looking at the whole thing, and if you were watching the game on Monday night, the same thing happened on a call with the Raiders and the Chiefs, and it was Derek Carr who got hit. I forget who it was for the Chiefs. And that was even worse because the Chiefs player literally hits Carr while he's still holding the ball. Carr fumbles. The Chiefs player actually recovers the ball in midair. Like this was a Chiefs player in possession of the football called for roughing the passer, which I know has never happened before and hopefully cannot happen again because he literally hit Carr. Ball comes loose. Chiefs player pulls the ball into his chest. Now he's got the ball, and then they both go to the ground, and since the Chiefs guy landed on him, even though the Chiefs at that moment possessed the football, it's still roughing the pass. Just the absolute most ludicrous thing any of us have ever seen, okay? And it is actually, I didn't think you could do worse than the Brady call, but that one was worse. And so the league's got a little problem here, and there's supposedly reports came out this week that the league has told the referees, hey, let's not be, like, ridiculous about this. And so the problem with this is, and this is why I've always been, I'm a spirit of the law guy, not a letter of the law guy. And I get with sports, sports are a little bit different because things are black and white, you know, foot inbounds, out of bounds, ball hit the ground or didn't hit the ground. You know, did the ball fly to the left of the upright, between the two uprights, or to the right of it? These are things that are all supposed to be objective. But there are still lots of subjective things in the rules, and that's where you need referees who you can trust to have a little bit of discretion and common sense. And when you got guys like Boger and Sheffers, who's usually pretty reliable, but I don't know what the hell he was looking at, and they can't make a little slight discernment. Okay, well, that's obviously, I know the rule says this, but I can see with my own two eyes what really just happened. Basically, as a referee, you have bosses just like everybody else. We all have bosses, okay? Are you going to get in trouble with your boss if you don't call that? That should be the standard, because I have a hard time believing that Jerome Boger or Carl Cheffers on those two games this past weekend, if they hadn't made those calls, would have faced some sort of blowback from their superiors. That oh, yeah, if they would, then I don't blame them for calling it. Then the problem goes higher. But, I mean, there's got to be common sense applied here. And this is the thing in life. These by-the-book people, and maybe you're one of them. I'm not trying to insult anybody. But, you know, we all have people in our lives who are like by-the-book people. They're annoying, right? Like, you don't want to hang around with those type of people. They can't use any personal discretion. They don't have any feel for anything. They just go straight by the book. They're robot. I mean, any jagoff could just go by the book. You know, any people who have some common sense who know when to apply certain things and when not to. That's who I want to be surrounded with in life. You know, not just nerd robots who are, like, well, the rule says, you know, he landed on him with his weight, even though he had the ball when he did it. But then what if you don't want to land him on him with your weight? So what if instead I swing him around? That way I don't land him on him with my weight. Oh, we slammed to the ground then. That was what's funny about it. Like, the Brady play, he swung him around. That's why he got called. But if he falls on him with his weight, then you're not supposed to do that. So you want to swing him a little bit so you don't go on top of him. So it's the dumbest thing. The whole, look, I get the NFL's issue. I get that the owners are paying, you know, 30, 40, 50 million to these guys. And obviously, they don't want to have them hurt. One, it hurts competitively. Two, it hurts marketing-wise. I mean, I get that you guys like Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and, you know, all the star quarterbacks of the league. You don't want these guys just getting roasted, you know, on some blindside hits and all that. Obviously, you don't want that. I get that. But there is a middle ground. Too often, like, we go from one extreme to the other. Oh, quarterbacks are getting hurt too much? Okay. Let's make all these absolutely just Byzantine rules that make no sense because we got to go kill a fly with a hammer, you know, instead of a fly swatter. It's just frustrating. So anyway, point is, yeah, that was bad, but I don't think overall any one team, I mean, with the Bucks thing, it was the final call of the game. It certainly stood out, but that game was poorly officiated all the way through. Bucks got the win 21-15. And then going back to that Raiders-Chiefs game real quick before I talk about Bucks-Steelers, since this is an open forum on the free stretch and we can talk about whatever we want for as long as we want. Raiders lost that game the other night, what was it, 30-29? Because they got down, they were up 17-0, blew that lead. Anyway, ended up being down 30-23 and scored to conceivably tie it, but they decided to go for two instead, and they missed, and it was 30-29. They did get the ball back anyway. They stopped the Chiefs, and then they ended up failing on fourth down, which we'll talk about in a minute, and losing 30-29. So fine, hey, what I mean, you know, I didn't have a problem with any of it, but again, maybe I read too much Twitter, but it's not just Twitter. I heard people say this too. Here we go with the analytics nerds. It's so stupid. People just go, they're such slaves to the numbers nerds. They make all the calls with a computer. That's why they lost. They should never have gone for two. First of all, again, people just can't get their brains around simple concepts sometimes, okay? First of all, going for two with a chance to win the game isn't really an analytics thing. That's not something where analytics says go for two or don't go for two. There are certain situations where, yeah, analytics definitely do play into two-point conversion decisions. But at the very end of a game, that you're just going for the win or the loss, right? That's it. Like, it's not like, oh, your expected value here is... No, I mean, you know the situation. You're down by one. You're going for something worth two. You can do whatever you want as a coach. And I don't have a problem with the aggressive call. In fact, I thought that it was a good idea, one, because, you know, you're playing a Chiefs team who obviously, even if you tie them, you don't want to get involved in overtime with these guys at Arrowhead. There was time left on top of that, though. So number two, if you miss it, and this actually ended up happening, if you make that two-point conversion, it's 31-30. And hey, great, we're leading, so that's good. But even if you miss it, it's not so bad because now, if it's 30-30 instead of 30-29, the Chiefs are going absolutely balls out, right? On offense, they're going down to try and win the game. But if it's 30-29, they're probably going to back off a little bit and try and run the clock out and maybe not pick up. And they did. They had a 4th-and-3, which I guarantee you they go for if it's 30-30. But being 4th-and-3 and they're up by a point, they're like, yeah, you know what? We got the lead. Let's punt it and try and stop them. They did the Raiders a favor because they should have gone for that. Gave the Raiders the ball back. So with enough time left in the game like that, it really wasn't even a do or die because there's a chance you get the ball back. I had no problem with it. What I had a problem with after that was the Raiders on 4th and freaking 1, which I love going to like they did in the first quarter, 4th and 1. They threw a touchdown pass of like 70 yards to Davante Adams. Hey, great. Okay? But that wasn't do or die. When it's do or die like that, and they go for the home run, just get the yard. Like, they tried to throw another deep bomb, and then Renfrow and Adams ran into each other. And they didn't even need a touchdown. They just need a field goal anyway. Like, just get the yard. You got another minute left, and then go from there, and just get 20 more yards after that and kick your field goal. That was really, really dumb. Analytics, if you want to just put, which that's the other thing. People put everything under the umbrella of analytics, and it's not always analytics. But analytics would have told you, hey, dumbass, it's 4th and like 6 inches. Just get the first down, and we'll worry about the rest later, you know. But I think Bill Simmons, who I used to love reading on ESPN way back in the day, he tweeted like, I'm paraphrasing. He tweeted something like, I'm convinced that most NFL head coaches would jump out of a fourth floor window if analytics told them it would help them get to the ground faster than taking the stairs. That's not a good take, all right? Analytics is there to give you information on probabilities and expected value of different scenarios. And I hear a lot of people always, especially people who like to fashion themselves as football guys, it's always about, it kind of comes back to this kind of underlying theme of toughness and brawn over smarts. Well, I'm a football guy. I know with my own two eyes what I need to do, and that I don't need some math nerds telling me what to do. If you got to have a computer to tell you how to play football, then you don't know football. That's kind of the underlying current of the whole thing. And I don't know if these people realize that all these analytic things are based on, what are they based on? Ask yourself for a second. All right? They are based on things that have happened on football fields, like by the men that play the game. So they're not just based on, I mean, maybe you use a computer to calculate something, but like people act like this stuff is just stuff that math nerds invented, that, oh, this guy never even played football and he's telling me. No, he's telling you that, you know, when you go for a 4th and 6 inches, your odds of getting it are higher and then eventually scoring a touchdown, and your odds of winning are higher than if you settled for a field goal. That's based on football, okay? So all you guys out there that have this attitude that, oh, these math nerds are ruining, and yeah, you hear it in baseball too. No, it's just, it's information we didn't have before. And nobody ever said a damn thing in the past whenever people didn't use analytics and they did dumb stuff. When a guy punted on 4th and 1 in the past and the other team took the ball down the field and 2 plays later, they're already past the point where they would have been if the punting team had gone for it and not gotten it. Nobody ever said anything then. People will let you do the dumb thing as long as the dumb thing has been conventional over prior times. But if the thing you're trying is a little bit different than what's the way it's always been done, now you're a nerd, now you're an idiot, and now, you know, you're getting away from the true spirit of whatever the hell it is. It's ridiculous. Analytics isn't responsible for half the stuff people blame it for, but I mean, even beyond that, like, you're a fool if you don't consider these things. And no one ever said, by the way, analytics runs everything. Todd Bowles actually was asked about that this week, and I liked what he said. Let me see if I can find it real quick. But he was asked about, I should have had it in front of me. My apologies. As a good host, I should have had my prep done better or had this article. But I was reading a Greg Allman article, and he said, like, he asked Todd Bowles, and they all out. I mean, he asked Todd Bowles about analytics, and he said, no, it's a tool we use for sure. He's like, it's part of the ultimate decision that rests with me. I'm paraphrasing all this, by the way. He said, it's my ultimate decision, but I do use that information. I'd like to know, you know, either to justify the decision I'm kind of leaning toward or maybe to question the decision I thought I was going to want to make. And that's exactly how it should be. Nobody's saying be a slave to this stuff. You saw it on Sunday Night Football, too. John Harbaugh, who's usually really good with that stuff, they're up 13-10 and 4th and inches at like the 5-yard line. And they kick a field goal, go up 16-10, a touchdown still beats you. That's crazy. Don't do that. If anything, you're incentivizing. If you're up 13-10 and you miss on the fourth down and they get the ball, now at least they're thinking, okay, a field goal ties it. You go up 16-10, you're begging them to go score a touchdown. Hey, newsflash, teams try for what they need. So if they need a field goal, a lot of times they're not as aggressive for a touchdown. But if you tell them, nope, you need a touchdown, now they're asking to go after a touchdown. So I don't know if you, and to me, you know, go for the touchdown yourself. If you win, game over right there. And even if you miss it, you've kind of softened their offense a little bit where they're thinking, let's get into field goal range and tie it. So that was another bad call. And you see good calls and bad calls by coaches all the time. Analytics isn't any more or less to blame than it ever has been, is the point. But I was at least encouraged by Todd Bowles and what he said. I'm also encouraged by the play calling a little bit more overall. Looking at, actually, I was looking at this chart here that was posted earlier today. I'm bringing it up right now. expected pass or pass rates over expected. This is when, given the situation, there's a standard expectation of if you're going to run the ball or pass the ball based on the down, the distance, the score, the time left in the game, all possible scenarios. And that gives you an expected pass rate for each down. The Bucs now are at the top of the league. They're third in distance beyond expected pass rate that they're throwing the ball. So they have definitely come along the past couple of weeks. I want to see that continue. You need to pile up points in this league. And that's another thing the Raiders did wrong the other night when they were up 14-0 and they settled for a field goal to make it 17-0. I think Troy Aikman even was lauding them, saying, well, you'd make it a three-score game. When there's 6 minutes to go in the game, you make it a three-score game, fine. When you're in the first half against a team like the Chiefs, you need to pile on points aggressively and efficiently and as much as you possibly can without regard to anything else. It's way too early in the game to think about number of scores your lead is. And if it's 14-0, you ought to be trying to make it 21-0, not 17-0. But anyway, the Bucs are showing a little bit more in that department. So let's hope that continues. And I thought they did a good job of it against Kansas City after they got down 21-3, of course. And then this week, even though the offense didn't do great in the second half overall, and this is for the whole season, the Bucs now rank near the top of the league in pass rate over expectation. So something to keep an eye on there. Email me if you want to. Love hearing from you guys. The email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. It's BOBBYGAMEDAY, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. And on Twitter, you can get me at @BobbyGameDay. The Free Stretch, like it always is, brought to you by our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. So if you're looking for a vehicle, whether it's a car, truck, or van, whether it's brand new or whether it's pre-owned, does not matter. They have tons of all of them. They even have plenty of non-Fords, too. They got Fords. They got other things. All of it. Go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. Remember, they spell it C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. And you can see all the inventory. You get the completely transparent, no haggle online pricing, and then you can go to the lot if you want to check it out in person after you see something you like a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry. Whatever you get the unlimited nationwide lifetime warranty on engine trouble. Like, you don't have to worry about anything with the powertrain warranty. It's covered. Could be 5 years from now, engine trouble, weird sound, take it in, covered, no stress. It's an unbelievable deal. On top of that, you get free roadside assistance for 10 years. You get free service like oil changes and stuff for the first year. So check them out, BillCurryFord.com. Thanks to them. Looking at this Bucs game Sunday now, they go up to Pittsburgh. We talked about after the Chiefs game, they got to 2-2. We said they got, and nothing is easy in the NFL. But as scheduling goes, after those first four games, which were pretty rough, things soften up. So they need to win the next three for sure going into Thursday night against Baltimore. I shouldn't say for sure, because if they don't win one of the next two now, it's not like the season's submarined. But yeah, you should beat Atlanta. They did. You need to go up to Pittsburgh and take care of business against this Steelers team before going to Carolina next week. So what do we got with Pittsburgh? Well, Bucs are an 8.5-point favorite. Kenny Pickett, the rookie quarterback, you know, it didn't go great. Obviously, against the Bills, a lot of things don't go so great, but they got hammered last week by a big number. Pickett threw for 5.6 yards per pass attempt last week. He had five drops by some of his teammates. Looking at injuries for this game, for the Bucs, Cam Brate has been practicing normally, so you can do that and still be in the concussion protocol. It doesn't guarantee he plays Sunday, but as of right now, it's looking more possible. Beyond that, I think Julio Jones, Todd Bowles said that, look, we don't want to just keep yo-yoing this guy. We want him to be fully, completely healthy. We'll bring him back when he's ready, but we don't want to bring him back for a week, have him miss two more weeks, then try again. They just want to get him right. So you may not see him, but Mike Evans, Chris Godwin looking good to go. Secondary's a little banged up there. Obviously, you've got nobody's out necessarily, but you've got injuries to really, I think everybody except Jamel Dean and Winfield has some sort of ding or tweak or something. Doesn't mean any of them are out, but it's a bit of an issue. Speaking of the secondary, Jamel Dean is fourth, and some of you guys don't care about PFF. That's fine. I'm just giving you a number. These numbers are courtesy of Bob Stoll with Dr. Bob Sports. He always posts good stuff about some numbers for each game each week that I like to read. And Jamel Dean, fourth in PFF's coverage grading among all cornerbacks. He'll be on Deontay Johnson. George Pickens, the rookie, is kind of coming on a little bit and kind of starting to get a little something going with Kenny Pickett. So I think, and this is more of a fantasy thing, not necessarily this week. If you're a fantasy person, take a look at Pickett, because I think he's going to keep getting better and better. Pickens, the receiver, not Pickett, the quarterback. But he's going to be up against Carlton Davis. Davis has been targeted on 42 passing attempts, second most in the NFL. I did not know that until I read that. Didn't feel that way, but Davis has been seeing a lot of action go his way. It's a testament to Jamel Dean. I'm not ripping on Carlton Davis, but Jamel Dean's been really good and hopefully continues to be good. But that's something to keep an eye on when the Steelers have the ball. As far as when the Bucs have the ball, the Steelers' defense has surrendered 28 explosive plays. That ranks 31st out of 32 teams. Of course, without T.J. Watt, they're not generating nearly as much pressure, which helps things. Chris Godwin has a pretty favorable matchup against Arthur Mollett, who is allowing 1.82 yards per slot cover snap. Now, it might not mean anything to you, but that's high. So that's a chance for Godwin to get some to chow a little bit on Sunday. Leonard Fournette, as far as catching passes out of the backfield, this is an interesting stat here. Pittsburgh's defense concedes 4.7 yards per target to running backs being thrown to out of the backfield. That's eighth out of 32 teams. So they don't give up a ton of passes to the running backs. Fournette did have 6 for 46 and the touchdown they scored this past week against Atlanta. So what about betting trends? We don't care about betting. We want the Bucs to win, but it does give you an insight into what to maybe expect. So I'm a little worried about this one. You've got the Steelers. Like I said, they're 1-4. They've lost 4 in a row, and they got hammered 38-3 by the Bills this past weekend. So now they apply to a bounce-back situation historically in the NFL when you've got a home underdog, which the Steelers are 8.5-point underdogs to the Bucs. When you have a home underdog coming off of a game where they lost by 21 points or more the week before, or actually it's more than 21 points the week before, the next week those teams are 82-27-2 against the spread. Now the spread's the spread. Bucks could win by 3 or 7 or whatever, and that's still a win. I'm just telling you what the numbers say. So teams coming off a loss of more than 21 points that are home underdogs that week, 82-27-2 against the spread. Under Mike Tomlin alone, the Steelers are 8-2 against the spread, coming off a loss of more than 17. So you're looking for regression to the mean here. In this case, it's positive regression if you're a Steelers fan. And you know how the NFL is. Whenever you think, oh, hey, these guys suck, I watched their game last week, well, the next week they look like all-stars. Oh, man, okay, these guys are awesome. Bet on them next week, they're garbage again. Everything zigs when it should zag. Everything yings when you think it's going to yang. So I would prefer them not coming off of a blowout loss. Obviously, the Bills are a little bit different. But anyway, those are the numbers. It's something to keep an eye on this weekend. Weather should be very nice. Actually, it's supposed to be mostly sunny. High that day, it's a 1 o'clock game. High is 61, and temperatures will be like in the upper 50s at kickoff, and then it'll get a little warmer, but not much warmer. So anybody who's going up there or who will be up there, it seems like it's going to be a pretty nice situation. And it's only the fifth time the Bucs have ever played at Pittsburgh, and only the third time they've played at whatever the hell they call the stadium. It used to be Heinz Field. It's something else now. But they are 2-9 all time against the Steelers, 1-3 at Pittsburgh, and they had that win a few years back. And so trying to go 2-1 now on this particular field as they make their third visit to Heinz Field. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a good weekend. We got football going on tonight, the Commanders and the Bears. Hey, listen, I know Thursday night football has been a little bit rough lately. The Colts and the Broncos last week was a complete abomination. I know the Broncos have Russell Wilson. Hey, in the offseason, nobody knew any better. So all the networks were like, oh, yeah, we got to get Russell Wilson on TV. They're on national TV, I think, again. Is it this week or next weekend? Either Sunday or night or Monday night or something. Stop putting the Broncos on national TV. But this week, a lot of you might not think it's much better. I beg to differ. I'm actually kind of interested to watch this Commanders and Bears game. I think the Bears, they'd be my pick tonight, straight up and against the spread. I know Carson Wentz is dealing with a little bit of a bicep strain up near his throwing shoulder. He's going to try and play. By the time you listen to this show, the game may already have been played, and you'll know if I was right or wrong. But I like the Bears tonight. And then this weekend, big college football weekend around the state. There's big games, Florida, LSU, FSU, Clemson. I think UCF plays tonight, and USF, they're trying. They got Tulane, and then all kinds of high school football, and then the baseball playoffs. So it's a really, this is the best time of year. Enjoy this month. It really is the best month of the year, in my opinion. Not far behind, though, are November and December, the upcoming months. So we're in the salad days right now, folks. Have fun. Get together with friends. You know, have them come over to watch the game Sunday. Whatever you're going to do, just be safe. Have a great time. I'll be back next weekend where hopefully we're talking about a 4-2 football team. But until then, thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to Joe Bucksfan for giving me this platform. It's a privilege to be on here. And thanks to all of you for listening wherever you are. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.